Hello and welcome to the One Short Podcast, the Sports Gazette's official cricket podcast. I'm Toby, joined as ever by Ayush and Michael. How are you guys?
Good, not bad. Series is 1-1. Thankfully, it's not 2-0. And because 2-0 would have been difficult for India to come back, but we'll talk about that. So, yeah, good day as an Indian cricket fan.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm all good. Couple of quality test matches, so yeah, I'm enjoying it.
It's not been bad so far. It's been two very, very exciting test matches, which has been good to see, I think. India, obviously, the victors, which I'm sure many, well, billions of people will be happy about. But yeah, it was a really good test match. India definitely dominated. They piled on 396 in the first innings. Jaiswal scored a brilliant double 100 with no one else really putting on many runs beside him, but he basically did all the damage right there. England then scored 253. Zach Crawley, 70, was the pick of the batters really there. But Jasprit Bumrah was unbelievable with the ball. India then went on and scored 255 in their third innings. And almost put the game to bed. And I think a few people were questioning whether England had a chance chasing it down, but they were bowled all out for 292 this morning. And yeah, lost by 106 runs, which wasn't a bad effort. So it's the second highest ever chase in India against India. I think Sri Lanka scored a few more runs, 295, I think I'm right in saying. But that's not a bad effort at all just to lose by the 100 runs. I think we're going to start with the man of the hour, Jaiswal. He scored 200 in this test match. He scored a brilliant 80 last test match as well. Ayush, I'll come to you first about this, but how good is he? He's only 22 and he sort of walked into test cricket and just been brilliant.
He's fantastic. I mean, and he already has such memorable innings in test cricket and in T20 cricket as well. There have been some innings from in the IPL, especially last season, where you looked at him and you were like, wow. And this just shows his range as a batter, playing those kind of innings, striking comfortably. He can score hundreds at above a strike rate of above 200 in T20 cricket. And then he can play this long, hard inning, score a double 100 in test cricket, which, I mean, eventually was the decisive innings of this test match, wasn't it? I think the next highest score in this test match was Shubman Gill's 104 in the second innings. So his 200 is just so good. And more than anything, like you mentioned, at the age of 22, it's the maturity. I mean, everyone around him's getting out after getting decent starts. Almost everyone had a good start in the first innings. And all the top batters right up to, I mean, Ashwin, everyone had a start, but no one could get to more than what, 34, I think, was the next highest score in the first innings. It's just his maturity that he keeps going, not flustered by what's happening around him. He knew he had to be the man to help India get to almost 400, and he did exactly that. So, yeah, knowing when to attack, knowing when to take on the bowling, knowing when to just take it easy, and brilliant. I think definitely one of the top five openers of the world in the future. He's still just young. He's going to be an all formats superstar, I think, if he keeps going this way.
Yeah, I remember seeing him in the IPL when he first came through. Was he only batting alongside Jos Buttler for the Royals, I think I'm right in saying?
He was, yeah.
And I remember him being ultra aggressive and looking just to dismantle attacks from ball one. And not that it's completely different in this test match, but there aren't many batters who will just go from ball one and dominate. And he doesn't actually, to be fair. He constructs an inning so well, it seems, and just knows, even though he's at, what, only 22, he knows how to make hundreds and to just bat time, but at a very good rate, which I think is a very good skill to have. And it can be very, very dangerous in the future, I'm sure. But you touched a bit, well, I just touched on it there a little bit, Michael, that Jaiswal batted big and then Gill later on, Crawley a little bit. There were no 100 partnerships, though, in this test match. No one really stayed together for long. There were 1,196 runs. No 100 partnerships, highest 90-odd, I think, between Iyer and Jaiswal. Do you think that was a big issue for England in particular, who had no one who went on to score any big runs and were only 100 behind? In theory, if Joe Root went on and scored 100, England could have chased it down.
Yeah, definitely, particularly in that first innings when we had to try and stay in the game after a strong start from India. I mean, Zach Crawley batted really well throughout, but we kind of needed him to have, a Jaiswal-like innings to be able to compete. I mean, that's obviously easier said than done because Jaiswal batted amazingly, right? But you mentioned Joe Root getting 100 there. That looks like it's not going to happen anytime soon, the way he's batting. I mean, his innings today was strange. He kind of got in, what was it, batted about 10 balls, smashed one for six, got a couple of boundaries, and was then skied one, got caught out. And so I'm a bit confused as to what I'm seeing off Joe Root. But other than that, it's just a shame no one really went with Zach Crawley. I mean, Bairstow kind of threatened this morning, but and when those two were in, it kind of looked like we might have a chance of competing. But apart from that, it was a strange one. Kind of struggled to play, struggled to after getting in, struggled to start piling the runs on.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shame. I mean, Zach Crawley scored, well, had two pretty good knocks that looked like 76 from 78 and 73 from 132. Two knocks which are kind of classic Zach Crawley, I'd say, where he maybe doesn't go big and in a lower scoring game or on a slightly spicier wicket could be very, very useful knocks, but he's not really gone in there and absolutely sort of blasted through an attack. And I mean, you could maybe argue the fact that he had no one alongside him and that makes it maybe a little bit trickier. But I mean, maybe that's an issue. Michael, I think I'm right in saying you picked Zach Crawley to be England's top run scorer. Were these the kind of knocks that you thought Crawley would have throughout, or did you hope that he could go on and maybe make a big 100 or even a double?
I think my thinking behind that was just because he's the form England batsman at the moment. He was really good in the Ashes in the summer. I know it was a while ago, but he just looks so good opening the batting with Basball. It perfectly suits him. And I think he that aggressive style is just yeah, it's just perfect for him. 76 off 78 in the first innings, really good. And 73 off 132 in the second innings, which doesn't sound as good, obviously, but I think that was a better innings. He looked really fluent, made really good decisions when it came to whether to attack, whether to defend. And he just hits the ball so cleanly. And against that India bowling attack, it's just so impressive. I mean, you compare Ben Duckett this series, he hasn't quite had the same fortunes, even though Ben Duckett in the past has been seen as maybe a better player of spin than Crawley, but it's not quite worked out as well for him. I think Zach Crawley is, he's one of my favourite England players at the moment, and hopefully he can kick on. I'm not sure where he is in the stats, in the run scoring stats, but he's got to be near the top. So I'm quite happy with my prediction. Ollie Pope's probably still at the top, but I'm feeling good about that prediction.
Yeah, I think that's not a bad one compared to my choice of Joe Root as England's leading run scorer, and I think I had Jack Leach down as leading wicket taker. So not very good options there from me. But I mean, there's still three more games to go, which is crazy to think about. It's been a great series, one all so far. I mean, someone who maybe might not have participated in many more Test matches, Ayush, was Shubman Gill. He scored a brilliant 100 though in that third innings that probably was the defining factor. If he hadn't scored any runs, India would have been bowled out for probably well under 200, maybe nearer 100. And I mean, yeah, how good a knock was that from him, do you think? And has he cemented himself in the side? Because there was a lot of question marks around him before this match.
Yeah, I mean, he's that 100's so important for him, not just in terms of for this game, not just for this game, but for him going forward as well, like you rightly mentioned, because there was a big doubt, and rightly so. I mean, I do want to cut him some slack because, again, it's not a lot of people are talking about the fact that he did have dengue, and it's a tough illness to recover from. And of course, he's had a little bit of time since the dengue, it hit him just before the start of the World Cup. And the weakness and the the effects on the body stay for a while after you've even recovered from the illness. And that just kind of was kind of reflecting in his game. He wasn't just confident, he wasn't as energetic. And then that hit his confidence because there was a string of low scores in the World Cup as well. And he was just not getting runs in South Africa as well. While that what happened in South Africa wasn't entirely his fault, because the pitches were really tough to play on over there. But yeah, this one's a really important innings for him, because talking about just the game, yes, I was nervous about the fourth innings even yesterday when England were what 60, 70 odd for just one. Chasing 398, 399. Because with baseball, no team who's bowling fourth can be safe. Because you just don't know when it just fits for them, and just everything fits for this England team when chasing, and they get the job done. Because they're not afraid. Even yesterday, Jimmy and Ben Stokes, they were saying that, yeah, we're gonna go for it. It doesn't matter. I think Jimmy said that McCullum sat them down after the day and said, even if they set us 600 runs on the board, we're gonna go for it. So yeah, you're always nervous. And without that Shubman Gill innings, maybe that target of what was almost 400 could have been easily 300, 320-ish, something like that at the most. And England would have really, really fancied themselves to get it done. And they did come close. They did score 290 odd eventually. So I think very important innings. He definitely looked like in that second innings a lot more determined, because of course he knew that his place in the team was on the line with Virat Kohli, KL Rahul both coming back in the next game. So I think he's just cemented his spot for now. Of course, no one's going to be happy with just 100. And given what we expect from him, he's going to be expected to do a lot more. And I'm sure he knows that. But positive signs for now, because Shubman Gill is a very important player for India.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of talk about Kohli and KL Rahul probably being back for the next test. It's unlikely, I think, that Jadeja is. I think he's out for a bit longer, and I think
Yeah, Jadeja, they're saying Jadeja might not come back for the next game. He's almost certainly out of the next game, and we don't know what next as well.
yeah. How do you think India's team might line up? We'll talk a little bit more about the next episode before the next one, but do you think that Shubman has just cemented himself in at number three now that he scored that good 100?
Yeah, I think so, because he is again one for the future, and someone that India probably looking at to lead the batting attack, or to be the leader of the batting in the future. And he's just got back to form, just found his confidence again, and I don't think India would want to kind of drop him and raise a few doubts in his head by not picking him for the next game. So I'm thinking he stays in there right now at number three. With if Kohli and Rahul both come back, I think Rajat Patidar is a straight swap for Virat Kohli. And then I don't know. Then I mean, that's where I'm a bit confused, right? Do they drop Shrikar Bharat and play KL Rahul, who then keeps wickets as well? Or they continue with Shrikar Bharat, who's been very good behind the stumps, I must say. His keeping's been really good. And you need a specialist keeper in these conditions. And so yeah, do they pick Rahul and drop him, or Shreyas Iyer? Because let's be fair, Shreyas Iyer definitely one of the top guys in this team, but his batting hasn't really come to the fore yet. There have been a couple of irresponsible dismissals at his end as well. So yeah, I'm not sure where they go with this, but I don't know, maybe Iyer sits out for me and just give Shrikar Bharat little bit of a longer run with the bat as well, and let him keep wickets because he's doing a good job.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see what India's thought process is. I mean, there's obviously a lot of talk before the series and even now during the series about, England's keeper choice. And Ben Folkes was the number one, possibly helped by the fact that Harry Brooke isn't out there because of some home issues he had, and he obviously dropped out of the series. Michael, Ben Folkes was phenomenal and has really proven the selectors right in allowing him to keep wicket. He took six catches, and I think most impressively, no buys, which is an unbelievable sort of stat that he's not been let through anything past him in that match. How good was Ben Folkes?
So good, yeah, so good. So he's an elite wicketkeeper, and he can also bat really well as well. But I mean, the main thing is his wicketkeeping, and he's making himself undroppable at the moment, I think. And Johnny Bairstow should be really worried going forward, because when Harry Brook comes back into the lineup, I can't see where Johnny Bairstow fits in, and it's a shame because I love Johnny Bairstow, I love how he bats, but he just hasn't had the stats recently to justify his selection as a specialist batter. Like, I mean, I really can't think of an occasion where I'd have Bairstow wicket keeping instead of Foulkes. Like, people talk about on the subcontinent, it should be Foulkes. Maybe at home, it should be Bairstow, but just keep Foulkes in all the time. Like, he's the best wicket keeper. He never seems to make mistakes. And we look like a better team with him in there, I think. And yeah, I mean, yeah, like I said, when Harry Brook comes back in, where does Bairstow fit in? I mean, it's Bairstow or Ollie Pope probably that gets dropped, right? I mean, it's got to be Bairstow. Well, what do you think? What do you think?
I mean, you can't drop someone who's just got a or almost got a double hundred last game. That would be absolutely crazy. I mean, I think Bairstow's hope is that Brook doesn't return for this series and he can score a few runs and maybe find some form. I mean, I personally think Ben Foulkes has to keep. I think he's been involved in 300 run partnerships in chases or in games that England have won, often playing the sort of secondary role. And I think that's probably his best role is isn't necessarily being that bullish guy at the front who's going to drive England to victory like almost all of their other batters are. He's definitely a guy who might maybe goes under the radar and it probably goes against him a bit. But I think with the gloves, there is no doubt he's a better keeper than Johnny Bairstow. I mean, it's very hard to measure that kind of thing. I think buys is a big thing. I mean, I looked at him compared to Johnny Bairstow recently. He's let through barely any buys in. So yeah, I looked at the New Zealand series and then this series. He's averaged 2.25 buys per innings, and Johnny Bairstow in the Ashes and against Ireland last summer, he averaged 8.2. So Foulkes is effectively in harder conditions is 5 runs better per inning. So that's 10 per game. So in theory, Johnny Bairstow needs to average 10 more with the bat at least than Ben Foulkes to be more useful. Just looking at the runs, let alone all the catches that Foulkes might take or the dismissals Foulkes might create by being a better gloveman.
Yeah, I mean, and like you just mentioned there, he's really good in that kind of backup batting position. Like when him and Stokes were in today, I was quite confident that we might chase down 400, because if Ben Stokes got going and you had Ben Foulkes there on the other end, like I feel like he's quite hard to get out. I think he faced about 70 balls, and then he was out to a really good Jasprit Bumrah ball. And that was when he was in with Tom Hartley. So, yeah, I mean, he's just an amazing player. I mean, he has to be in every England team now from now on, I think.
Will they retain him for his keeping? Because, or do you think in home conditions or conditions similar to England, they'll just go back to having Bairstow? Of course, this is assuming once Harry Brook comes in and slots right in, that they just go with Bairstow, let him keep wickets, because he's done that in England and in similar conditions, and they just, again, Ben Foulkes kind of has to sit.
I think there'll be uproar if he wasn't selected in the future. Like, I think he's really won the hearts of England fans, and I know Twitter isn't a good thing to go by to get fans' kind of opinions, but generally all you see on Twitter is people hating on Bairstow's wicket keeping and people praising Ben Foulkes' wicket keeping. And I mean, is that I think that's kind of justified. Like, whenever Bairstow keeps, he's not at that level that Ben Foulkes is. And yeah, Ben Foulkes just has to play. And he's a good batter as well.
I think, yeah, you can't underestimate. Foulkes isn't as good a batter as Bairstow, and I think you'd be very hard pressed to find many people who know cricket well and think that. He's not a bad batter by any stretch, but he's a very good number seven to have. You probably couldn't bat him at six, would be the argument. Whereas Bairstow is well, he's a frontline batter who's learned how to keep, really. And I think it's an interesting one. I mean, I think when one of the things that maybe is a bit more sort of tells the story quite nicely is the fact that whenever Bairstow gets the gloves, the talk is always about the fact that, you know, can he keep? Is he a good enough keeper? Is he good enough behind the stumps? With folks, no one ever really mentions it unless he makes a mistake. And then you'll find a few sort of Bairstow fans who might be like, oh, you know, Johnny Bairstow would have caught that one or whatever it might be. And you get a lot more the other way around where if Bairstow drops something, oh, would folks have dropped that? And I think it's a lot more of a conversation about Bairstow's keeping. With folks, no one ever really thinks about it because he is so comfortable and so relaxed when he has the gloves. And I think everyone kind of trusts him. On your question though, Ayush, about whether he will keep his place, I think it's hard. England might look to use this summer to see if he can and will score a few more runs. I mean, the West Indies and Sri Lanka are coming to England. I think it will be quite telling if they go back to Bairstow because they probably want to see if he can keep. I mean, he's getting on a little bit. He's probably not going to be there in a few years. I mean, folks is only a couple of years younger as well. So it'll be interesting maybe to see what will happen. I mean, there's still another 3 games this series. Folks might, you know, lose all of his keeping ability and drop 7 catches every game and miss all the stumpings and let through hundreds of byes, and that'll be something to look at. But I mean, for now, I think folks is and has to be England's number one gloveman. Talking about number one, Jasprit Bumrah. I mean, he was man of the match, number one bowler by far in the game. Took 6 for 45 in that first innings and looked brilliantly. England batters just had no clue what to do with him. Took another 3 for in that fourth innings. And yeah, Ayush, he was absolutely crucial in India's victory. Without him, I mean, England probably would have scored a fair few more runs in that first innings and probably would have been a lot more comfortable chasing down the total at the end as well.
Brilliant. I mean, just, you know, Ben Stokes's reaction after he got him out with a cutter in the first innings, I think says it all. Ben Stokes was, I mean, he just looks at him and goes, man, how do I play you? How is anyone supposed to play you when this is how you're bowling? And that I think that says it all with Bumrah. It's just that spell was some of the best fast bowling I've ever seen from Jasprit Bumrah. 6 for 45, was it? I think it was. Yeah, 6 for 45 or something. And brilliant bowling. This that delivery, that Ollie Pope Yorker that castled the stumps. I think that image is gonna be circulated everywhere. People are gonna tweet and retweet it and share it for years to come. And there were already calls to hang it in the Louvre in Paris. So I mean, that was just crazy. That's how good that spell was, that delivery was. And to get Pope, because the match was right in the balance at the time, Pope, given his form, if he would have stuck in, England would have gotten a lot more runs. And things would have been very different had it not been for that dismissal at the time. And brilliant. Just number one bowler, bowls anywhere, any wicket, any conditions, and he's your man to do the job. It's just going to be worrying when and if and when India do drop him for one of the games, how they're going to do that and how it's going to affect the team. So that's my worry, but we'll see because it's 5 test series and they might sit him at least once.
No, definitely. On the other side of things as well, I mean, India's spin attack didn't seem to be anywhere near as dangerous as I'm sure they would have hoped. They were out bowled by the English spinners who had 3 caps between them before the game started, and no Joe Root for that third innings as well. He only bowled 2 overs before going off the field with an injury. Michael, I mean, Jack Leach gets injured in the first test match, and in England's bowling attack didn't seem to really deteriorate that much at all. What did you make of the fact that Hartley, Bashir and Ahmed, who yeah hadn't really bowled at all in test match cricket or even really in any much red ball cricket, bowled so well and out bowled statistically the Indian team?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I think Jack Leach will be a little bit worried, to be honest, because Tom Hartley is coming for his spot in that team, I think. Tom Hartley looks like a really, really good player, and he's a much better batter than Jack Leach as well. Like, he's been piling on the runs. I think he might be averaging around like 28, 30 in the test so
28,
far.
28 and a half in the 2 test matches.
It's crazy. So
He's
yeah.
outscored Johnny Bairstow, Rohit Sharma, Ravi Jadeja, KS Bharat, Iyer, Joe Root, KL Rahul. He's averaged out batted so many of them so far.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's just looked like a really good player. And he's kind of come out of nowhere, and it's great to see. So yeah, I mean, Rayan Ahmed is also looks like a really good batter as well. I know that's not why we're putting them in the team, but it really helps the tail. You know, if we have them at 7 and 8 or 8 and 9, like those tail runs just add so much to an innings. And like we saw Rayan Ahmed as the Nighthawk last night coming in, and he looked good. Like he bats really well. I know Jack Leach has had one of the most iconic innings in England Test history, and we can't forget about that. But I just don't think he's on that level batting wise. But I mean, he's much more experienced, isn't he? And that's why he probably, you know, has the edge on Hartley at the moment. But I think our top two spinners are probably Jack Leach and Rayan Ahmed, and Tom Hartley is really knocking on that door. So yeah, it's great to see. Like when you look at India's spinners, the fact that they're out bowling them in the Indian conditions, hats off to them.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to see who how, what selection might look like for the next match if Jack Leach is fit again. I assume Bashir might miss out, which would be a shame. But
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah.
I mean, he had a very, very good debut. Didn't quite get the 5 from debut as so many England spinners have done over the last couple of years. But I mean, there's always an opportunity there. And yeah, I mean, we'll be back next week as well to talk about the third test, which is in about 10 days, and should be quite an exciting rest of the series, which we good. But at the same time, New Zealand have been hosting South Africa in what has been an absolute run fest so far. New Zealand piled on 511 in their first innings at the end of day two. South Africa are 80 for 4 right now in reply. Ratchan Ravindra scored 240 from just 366 as well in the first innings. Kane Williamson 118 as well. Absolutely mental. They put on 230 between them. That is so rough for the South Africans. And I mean, it is a makeshift South African team as well. We were talking about it before. Not many names out there who most cricket fans will have heard of. Dwan Olivier and Dane Patterson both played in England in the County Championship a bit. David Bellingham has been really good for Beddingham, sorry, has been really good for Durham recently. Hams has played a few games. Keegan Peterson, but yeah. Very, very few stalwarts of the South African side as well. Ayush, do you think South Africa have a chance here? I mean, it was probably a very flat pitch for that to happen, but it's a could be a really big challenge for an inexperienced South African side.
First of all, Toby, absolutely okay with you calling Beddingham Bellingham, because I mean, we're sports journalists, and in the sports world, Bellingham is a name I think we're seeing at least 10 times a day. So I think that's absolutely fine. But yeah, anyway, South Africa. You see, I think it's just three, four of the guys who've even played Test cricket before, and it's tough because I don't think even they came here expecting to do much. By the selection, it was really clear that Test cricket is secondary for South Africa right now. To an extent, they're not really, or at least this series is, I wouldn't say Test cricket is, but this series is not that important to them. But of course, we know some of the main guys are playing elsewhere, so they were not able to come here. But yeah, it just doesn't look like they're really going to make a comeback or challenge New Zealand, right? And especially in New Zealand, and they're 80 for 4 or something in the first innings already. So it's tough. I don't see a way to really come back. But yeah, some of the youngsters can really show their mettle and show what they're made of. And this could be like a, this could be a series that puts them in contention for selection in future test matches and test series, even when some of the main players do come back. One spot is definitely open, we know for sure, with Dean Elgar's retirement. He's not coming back. So yeah, that spot is up for grabs. We'll see who takes that up. But yeah, I mean, New Zealand as well. Ratchan Ravindra, another, I spoke about Yashasvi Jaiswal earlier, but Ratchan Ravindra is another guy who I definitely think is one of the all-format superstars for the future. And I'm really excited to see him in the IPL as well in a couple of months. Let's see what he does in T20 cricket under MS Dhoni as well. But yeah, I just read this something yesterday for from Ravindra, where he said that he was batting with Williamson, who was one of his idols. And once he gets to his 100, was it? Yeah, Williamson just walks up to him and says, "Mate, you're unbelievable." And just to hear that in the middle of your innings, of your partnership with a legend like Kane Williamson, that's just cherry on top of the cake for Rachin Ravindra. And this is brilliant. And yeah, brilliant innings from him, great partnership with Williamson. And yeah, 511, I think, just ends the game right there for New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, I think if South Africa managed to bring it back and not lose by an innings, I think that would be quite impressive. But yeah, I mean, Michael, you've been a big Rachin Ravindra fan for a good few months now. Since early on in the World Cup, I think you spotted him quite nicely. How impressed are you with him? He's yet again, as Ayush mentioned, only sort of 22, 23 as well, and seemingly seems to be piling on runs in all formats.
Yeah, what can I say? My talent identification is on point. Yeah, he's a star boy, isn't he? He's the next big thing in New Zealand cricket. I mean, 240 off 366 balls. That is insane. 26 fours. Kane Williamson, meanwhile, 118 off 289 balls. If whoever watched that, I'm sorry to you sat through that. That sounds boring. As but not unlike Matt Henry's innings though, 27 off 9, 300 strike rate, fair play to him. But yeah, I mean, why I was just wondering, why are there none of the big South Africa players playing?
They're all in the SA T20 at the moment. So South Africa basically made an executive decision saying we're not going to send any of our sort of best players who seem to be sort of all format best players like Markram, who plays and captains the T20 side, obviously in the Test side as well. Jansen, Rabada, all of these guys, and Ngidi, they're all playing just in the T20 to try and grow that side of it. And arguably it's working. It's been a very good SA T20 so far, and I'm sure that's what they're hoping, is to try and create some sort of money that way, which Test cricket never really seems to bring. I mean, I think it's South Africa where only India, and like most other sort of smaller nations, only India really creates a profit for them, because although England and Australia have a big travelling fan base, they don't draw the same television revenue which India has, and the billion people at home who love to watch Indian cricket all around the world. So I think a lot of countries like South Africa could be looking to do this into the future, or maybe there'll be, sort of test designated windows, I guess might be the option.
Interesting. Yeah, well, either way, it's a big mountain to climb for those South Africa youngsters. But if David Bellingham's any relation to Jude, I'm sure they'll be all right.
Maybe there's long lost distance in there, long lost cousins. And yeah, on the other side of things, Sri Lanka beat Afghanistan by 10 wickets fairly comfortably. Afghanistan put on 198 with Ahmad Shah 91. Wickets spread around a bit between the two Fernandos, and Jayasuriya took three for as well before Sri Lanka piled on again 439 hundreds from Dinesh Chandimal and Angelo Matthews, the two stalwarts of Sri Lankan cricket, have been around for a decade now. Kruunaratne scored 77, really showing that age seems to bring experience and runs at the same time. It's not bad from those three. Four for Naveed Zadran as well. And yeah, I think a few run outs in there, a few retired hurts, a few run outs from the Afghanistan side. And yeah, then Ibrahim Zadran, who scored quite a few runs for Afghanistan at the World Cup, scored 114. Ramat Shah another 50, but Afghanistan couldn't put on anywhere near enough, 296, which left Sri Lanka with a easy 56 for none chase. Kruunaratne and Madushanka, no, Madu Madushka, there it is, Madushka, at the end, scored 32 and 22 not out, and Jayasuriya took a fifer, sorry, in the innings before as well. And yeah, that was just a one-off test, which Sri Lanka seemed to win fairly comfortably in the end. I mean, it's good to see Afghanistan playing some more test matches again. They haven't played huge numbers since they were given their test status. But similar to South Africa, they were lacking a lot of their big name players. No Rashid Khan, no Nabi, no Mujeeb, none of these sort of the global superstars that they have were given opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, none of them, and that's a shame because seeing how much test cricket they do play, you want to have these guys each and every time they're playing anything, right? Again, I'm not sure about Rashid Khan's fitness right now because he did not play in those three T20s that they played in India as well a few weeks ago, last month. And he wasn't here, so I'm guessing Rashid not playing here probably has a lot to do with his injuries as well. But a good chance for some more youngsters to show what they've got. The case with Afghanistan as well. But yeah, for them, it's not just test cricket. I think in any format, whenever you're missing Rashid, Mujib, Nabi, and all these guys, of course, some of them don't play certain formats or play it lesser than something else. But whenever they are missing, it's a huge miss, right? Because whenever Afghanistan's playing, this having Rashid, Mujib, Nabi, and some of these other guys playing only brings so much, so many eyeballs and so much of attention to this Afghanistan team. And Rashid Khan, not just in Afghanistan or in Asia, I think he's one of the best spinners in the world and one of the best all-rounders, I would say as well, because he's more than handy with the bat. Calling him just handy with the bat and in the field would also be an understatement. So yeah, whenever he misses out for any team he's playing, if he's missing out, it's a bit of a shame. But yeah, not a good outing for them. The inexperience, the larger inexperience of this Afghanistan team falling short to Matthews and Chandimal, who just keep scoring runs. I mean, they're just unstoppable for Sri Lanka. And Matthews doesn't bowl anymore, but he gets all the runs.
Doesn't need to
So
when he scores a big hundred.
yeah, he's just scoring so frequently for them. And Dinesh Chandimal as well. His career's been one of the most, it's been a very weird career in a way, with sitting out, coming back in, sitting out, coming back in. But I think he's one of the more consistent guys for Sri Lanka in the last 10, 12 odd years.
No, definitely. Let's have a look at Rashid Khan. Yeah, was injured, back injury, but he was due to play in the Big Bash, which he withdrew from earlier, and also the SAT20. So I think he possibly wasn't even due to play in this series, even if he was fit.
Yeah, I'm guessing the Gujarat Titans would also have a bit of a say in this, wanting him fit in 1 month time before the IPL comes along. So and he, of course, given what the IPL means to him and to other players from Afghanistan, I'm guessing would have also wanted to prioritize that.
Yeah, I'd assume so. But that is all we have time for on this episode of the One Short Podcast. We'll be back in about a week, just in time for the third Test match for England versus India. And what could be very, very crucial, I think whoever wins that will obviously take a 2-1 lead. But I think they'll have a bit of momentum and maybe they'll be able to dominate the rest of the series. Predictions quickly from you guys. I want, you've got a few weeks now before we finish, or the series finishes off. I want you to give me one prediction: who is going to win the series right now, or is it going to be a draw? I'll come to you first, Michael.
India 3-2, I think.
Sticking with the same prediction. I
No,
like
I
it.
went
Oh no, you went 3-1.
3-1. Yeah, but I can't see a draw happening. The game seemed to wrap up pretty quickly at the moment. So yeah, 3-2.
How about you, Ayush?
Yeah, I'm a little bit tempted to stick to my 3-1 prediction, but yeah, I'm not sure about the draws. I mean, like I said when we were making the first predictions, that the only test I could see being drawn was next one in Rajkot. But the way both teams are playing, I mean, it's not just England. We know that they want results and they play that brand of cricket aggressive. They'll push for a result. But India as well, I mean, in the second test, they had chances to bat a lot longer than they eventually did in both innings. And everyone just seemed to be in a hurry. Maybe it's India's way of playing as well, new way of India approaching things as well, or maybe just against this England side, wanting to counter baseball with a bit of not baseball, but whatever you call it, India's version of it. So yeah, I am tempted to say 3-1, but I think it will be 3-2 India.
Sticking with the same one, I'm going to stick with 3-2 to India. I think there could be a draw, but I think, yeah, as you both said, that neither team seems particularly interested in a draw, and I think, yeah, India just have the edge. I think it'll be extremely close in all three test matches. I think England have already done better than a lot of people might have predicted, which has been impressive. But yeah, thank you guys for joining on the podcast, and we'll be back in just a few days' time for the third test match. See you guys next time.